Hi everyone, my name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, A Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. And the other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. That small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Before we get started here, I want to mention our monthly guidebook slash workbook called The Motivated Musician. It's geared towards serious musicians and it offers challenges, exercises, professional advice, and more to help keep your musical life and career on track. Also, as an extra perk, members get exclusive discounts from My Music Masterclass. And if you want to learn more, go to mymusicmasterclass.com, hit subscribe in the header menu, and you'll be good to go. So, all right, everyone, we are here in for a really cool episode and with Rosh Roslin, who does a lot of different things in the music industry at this point. And we preach this all the time about how it's good to diversify your skills to keep working, and especially in this pandemic, but even before so. I mean, we talk about this all the time, and Rosh is a perfect example. Matter of fact, we had technical shit go down right before this happened, and we had to solve it, and he solved it. You know what I mean? It's amazing. So how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
For those of you who don't know, so Rosh is a guitarist, but he's also a drummer and a producer. He does professional tech stuff. He techs for people. And he also, from what I understand, you're an AxeFX fractal like guru, right? You program for people?
I have a really great relationship with Fractal Audio and a lot of companies like it, you know, guitar companies. So RJM, Eventide, you know, a lot of these companies, they're not based in LA. So sometimes they actually need help with somebody on site with any one of their clients or any of their artists. So I do a lot of stuff like that. So Fractal Audio has been, we've had a really great relationship. So some of their artists, sometimes they, you know, they're based on the East Coast. So sometimes they can't help any of their artists get some of their rigs up and going for tours or gigs or sessions or whatever. So they actually asked me to help on site and then, you know, program a lot of their rigs and stuff. Eventide has done that in the past, other companies as well. So
I'm confused though. So like what? Is Fractal like a language or is it a company? Is it like, I don't understand that whole, I'm so behind on this shit as like a guitar player.
Yeah, like are there competitors?
What is it?
Fractal Audio, they make basically a guitar amp modeler. That's like what put them on the map. So they started with the AxeFX standard. And what this is basically like, if you remember way back in the day, there was the Kidney Bean Line 6 pod.
Sure.
And so, you know, this had like, you know, a knob that like you could pick a Marshall amp or like a Fender amp or anything. So they basically, you know, took that, not that idea, because that idea has been around for generations, but more just like, okay, how can we make this actually like the best thing for every guitar player? Make it feel like an amp, sound like an amp, have like, you know, studio quality effects or any of that kind of thing. And so that started with the AxeFX standard, and then it's gone through so many generations. They're on the third generation now with the AxeFX 3. And basically, it's a great studio tool. It's a great live tool. I mean, so many people tour with it, but it basically sounds like any one of your favorite amps. It has all the you know, effects that you would use. So other, you know, devices in that market, you know, could be like the Line 6 Helix or the Kemper. Or, you know,
the Kemper, that's the one I've heard.
Exactly. Yeah. So those are the kinds of things that like people would use. So, you know, it makes touring a lot easier. So you don't have to drag out like, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 guitar amps on a tour.
Right.
You can just bring like a, you know, 2 or 3 space
and
rack.
It's really and then, consistent, right?
Like, yeah, so absolutely.
For the crew, it's like way easier.
Totally. And, you know, it has, you know, that particular device or any devices like it, you know, there's so many options. You can run into like a traditional guitar cabinet. You can run into power amp, you know, it just makes things so much easier. You can, you know, plug it directly into front of house, be on in-ears or anything like that.
So do you work within the other languages too, or just that's the units you work with? Do you work with, you know, like the competition, like you said, like Line 6 is, or the one you Kemper?
Yeah. I've programmed rigs using everything from the Line 6 Helix to the Kemper to, what were some of the other ones? There was like the Avid one. I think it was the,
oh shit,
the 11 rack, I think. Yeah. So yeah, I was like, what was
a random name.
Yeah. So
it's the 11 rack,
you know, all these different little modeler things, you know, and it's not only that, but, you know, basically a lot of clients, they hire me to, you know, build, you know, guitar rigs. Basically they like, you know, record an album and they say, okay, cool. We recorded this album. How do we recreate these sounds? How do we tour with it? How do we, fly with it? You know, how can we build something that's like going to be flyable? How can we work with European power, Asian power? You know, that's all going to be different from those kinds of things. So it's more like I solve a lot of those logistical problems. It's not just like the programming of the sounds, but it's also like, okay, how can we do this that meets a certain budget? Or how can we do this so we can fit it into overhead? Or how can we do this in a modular way so that, like, you know, the entire guitar rig is going to be three pieces so that if you land in Europe somewhere, you know, and two of the pieces don't show up, you know, you can still have a show.
That gives you so many more options.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of the, in the tech space or in the touring world that I've worked in, it's a lot of those kinds of things. Or like, I mean, it could be anything, you know, and anybody who's like been a guitar tech or drum tech or anything like that, you sit there and just solve problems. It's like, here's the constraints that we have. How do we pull this off? And how do we make it, you know, so that it's bulletproof, so that it's redundant? I mean, I've programmed racks where it's like, how do we sync it up with Ableton and make it, you know, work with two laptops in case one goes down?
You need some kind of time code.
How do we make the light show happen? Yeah, exactly.
Backup MD.
Exactly.
No, I know. You're basically a keyboardist at that point. It's like a keyboardist MD who's just running, you know, you have to have the time code. You have to sync everything to it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I love that stuff. I am the listeners of the show and Jake know that I'm a nerd. And, you know, I was just talking to my son. My son asked the other day, he was like, he's 4, you know, he's going to be 5. And he's like, I want to build a Rover, like the one that Perseverance, you know? And I was like, well, yeah, I mean,
Jesus,
that costs a lot in general to make it, you know, because, you know, they work at NASA or Jet Propulsion Labs.
You
have
budgeting conversations with the kid
already. And I was like, but we could get a Raspberry Pi machine and program it with Python and like, and make a little Rover for like $80. That's awesome. You know what I mean? And it face tracking and, you know, object avoidance, and it'll have a little grabber arm, you know? So it's all there. I have a 3D printer. I'm a total nerd, you know, but when it comes down to it, I've seen that you do a lot of stuff that I've done as well. Like it looks like you do some front end developing as well.
Yes.
But I saw that you do JavaScript. I saw some code, I think, on your Instagram, and, you obviously do HTML and CSS if you do that. And do you only do like web apps and responsive designs, or do you transition that to apps for the, you know, Google Store and iOS?
Yeah, I've dabbled in a lot of different programming languages. It's actually my family, my parents growing up, they work in software.
Right.
So I picked it up from them. And you know, when you're younger, you don't want to do what your parents do. Right?
No.
So I was like, oh, this is the
especially
like
not coding.
Thing.
You know what I mean? Like, but it is fun now, but like back then it wouldn't have been, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the funny thing is I've come full circle at it, because I remember like asking my parents like, hey, I need to code my MySpace. How do I like,
exactly.
you know, put...
I need to get checks and it's not working.
Yeah. You're like div center, you know, exactly.
Yeah. I used to write it on my desk. In pencil, like what the HTML things were, you know, like all the tags and stuff. And it was totally like a total just like, I want to be able to like put this cool song on my MySpace and, you know, and have like top 20 instead of a top 8 and like have a cool background and all this kind of stuff. So
totally. Making those backgrounds, you had to enter HTML code in that. It was so funny. Mm-hmm. Man. It's kind of cool that you could do that, you know?
Yeah, I learned from my parents doing that. And so, you know, it's funny because when you talk to musicians, a lot of them maybe don't want to talk about things that they do outside of music because maybe, quote unquote, it, you know, I don't know, you're not a real musician if you do other things.
Screw that.
And it's really, yeah, it's really interesting because there's some really fantastic musicians. Like there's one musician that comes to mind, like Jason Sutter, right? He's played for, I think he plays for Cher now. He's played for like so many different people. And he has a real estate license.
Nice.
You know, a lot of people don't know about this. So he's buying and selling and flipping houses like on
the side. He's probably a fucking people person. You know what I mean? He's a performer.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
So people probably love
him. And you can do that at your own rate. I mean, that's a job that you can do when you need to do it. You don't have to be on all the time.
And he's super passionate about it. He doesn't need the income. That's the number one thing. It's like he doesn't need the income from real estate. It's just another thing. And you know, he's a touring musician. So, you know, he's out on the road 6-7 months out of the year. And then those downtime months, he can either do sessions or flip a house. Like I always approached being a musician like that, where I was like, okay, cool. Like if I'm going to go out and do a bunch of gigs and then there's some slow times, I can do anything. I can tech, I can, you know, do code, I can do whatever. And so when I came about going back into code, maybe, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, it was more like, hey, I've spent a lot of time sitting in like an airport, you know, just like waiting for the flight. And then I was like, well, this is kind of wasted time. Well, why don't I make the, you know, the use of it? Or sitting at sound, you know, you do the hurry up and wait load in where you like load in for a wedding gig and then you have to sit around for 5 hours.
It actually just creates anxiety and probably actually hurts a performance mind than anything. You know what I mean? Just all that doing nothing.
Learning code is amazing because you're learning something that you can use to save money as well and to enhance everything that you're doing. I mean, I started this company by coding the first website before we redid it. And then by the time we redid it, I was able to tell the developer that I hired. Well, first of all, I was able to get a really good developer because I knew what to look for. And then I was able to tell them exactly what I wanted and knowing the constraints of exactly what it does, you know, and you know, that's a good way to not get ripped off, as I've said to people before. But it's also like, I don't know, I just feel like it's good to know how to do things yourself. And any of that, that's just good stuff to know. You know, it's just like learning another language. If you're in an airport and you were learning French or German or Spanish, I mean, it's all good. You know, it's all like stuff that's going to help you eventually somewhere.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things also, for your listeners, you know, if you think historically, right, right now we're at a time in human history where people who know how to use a computer and know how to use the internet are going to have like a significant advantage over other people who don't know how to do those things. So if you rewind in human history, it's like, okay, there was a time in where most of the population was illiterate, right? They didn't know how to read, whatever the language was. And so those who knew how to read had a significant advantage and significant leverage over the rest of the people.
Yeah.
So those who could read and write, you know, were going to make more significant income. Then, you know, fast forward even more, those who could, you know, do mathematics or something would have a significant advantage over people who didn't know how to do that. So scientists, like people who understood physics, people who understood how engineering and machines work, like if you could actually like engineer and build something and you understood that on a fundamental level better than most of the population, you have a significant advantage. So in my opinion, now people who know how to use the internet and know how to use, you know, do code and like understand a computer and how computers think and work are going to have a significant advantage over people who don't. Like we're in a pandemic, and one of the things that, in my opinion, has slowed down people being able to be vaccinated is like the first tier that opened up were people over 65, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, if you go on that website to try to like vaccinate,
I know where you're going with this.
It's super difficult.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And you have the worst like illiterate computer
people. It's actually difficult.
Trying to do the worst site.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I actually have to do double takes on that shit. And I'm very, very complete computer literate, you know? I mean,
I never thought of that shit.
Exactly. Bad. So there's a significant problem, right? There's this like huge barrier of entry that if you can't operate a computer or a simple website, then you are at a significant disadvantage. And now like people who can't operate a website right now can't schedule a vaccine appointment to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
And that's a real tragedy. Yeah, that's like a life or death kind of situation. So when I say like, hey, you know, whoever can actually like, you know, understand the internet, use a website, program a computer has a significant advantage. I mean, this is like you said, life or death. So
yeah.
My belief is that in like we're seeing this like in the next 10, 20, 30 years that those who can, you know, even just understand a little bit of code, understand how computers operate and work, can program in different languages, they're going to have like a significant advantage over people who can't. And, you know, these jobs pay six figures, you know,
yeah.
The leverage you get is completely infinitely scalable, right? You know, it doesn't cost you anything to like copy an app. Like your app can be downloaded 100 times, a million times. It doesn't cost you a nickel more. Those yep. kinds of things are like, give you maximum leverage as any type of creative person. And those are going to be the things that are going to be around in 10 or 20 years versus like maybe, you know, a labor job or something like,
yeah,
you know, like being a barista or something, you know? Like,
no, and digital assets is what we sell. And it's, it's also getting to the crypto world, which is bonkers now. I don't know if anyone's aware of this stuff, but mm-hmm. have you heard of NBA Top Shot? And,
right. Are they selling NFTs? Is that what's
I was going to say?
Well, NFTs is another one. But this is NBA Top Shot, which is a different kind of crypto. And it's
sounds like a Sega basketball game.
No, it's basically moments. I mean, I heard about it. It's moments of like some like LeBron making a shot or something, you know, or whatever it is. It's like a little clip of it, I guess. And they
it is basketball.
No, but they're basically trading cards. It's what it is. It's just a digital.
I get you.
It is basketball right now. It's because it's NBA.
Yeah.
But it could be anything, you know, but right now it's NBA Top Shot. And there are these moments like Steph Curry doing something or this. And then, you know, whatever it is, they sell these packs. And if you get it, it's worth a certain amount. Yet it's really like, it's totally virtual. It's totally crypto. Mm-hmm. And of them are selling
is it from the Topps company?
It's not.
I know Topps is.
It's like, it's from someone doing, like NBA is on board with it. You know what I mean? Like, regardless. One of them just sold for $300,000, and it's not a physical item. It's not like a Mickey Mantle rookie card or like a Michael Jordan rookie. You know what I mean? It's virtual. And when it comes down to it, this is a whole different conversation. But it's worth whatever people are willing to pay for it. You know. But if people decide mm-hmm. tomorrow it's worthless, it's worth nothing. You know. Anyway,
that's true.
These are the kind of things that I hear daily, and you know, I'm not old, but I'm not young, and you know, I've went through a lot of, and it's the kind of thing that we're gonna have to keep up with as people. Like, you have to be literate to all the possibilities right now, and blockchain is huge, you know.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, without diving down that whole rabbit hole, it is going to be something significant in the future. You know, right now, you know, the analogy I can make is that everybody's driving a really nice car. But the people in the blockchain, NFT, that kind of space are, you know, flying really terrible, crappy planes. It doesn't mean the technology is a bad idea or bad. But, you know, it's like the Wright brothers, you know, they're flying like this little tiny prop plane right now. But
it's still a plane.
It's still a plane. Eventually, it's going to become, you know, a fighter jet or a 747 at some point in the future, while everybody else is still driving around in cars looking up at the sky going, oh, man, we should have jumped in on that.
It's weird, though, because like I think the quote-unquote jump in like genre of people is definitely maybe the 18 to like 30 crowd, and then there's like the older crowd that's just trying to catch up, so they're just trying to jump in. But I feel like the younger generations, they already have like a Taoist approach to technology. Like they sort of just glaze over and just let this stuff go by, and if they want to like jump into something, they'll do it, but they're not as obsessed. Like they're not worried. They know that technology is going to be progressing faster and faster and faster. They're already just like so like cool with it. It's weird. It's hard to explain, but I feel like they are like the Taoists of technology, like that generation. They're not panicking, you know?
It's bonkers, man. I mean, the way that all this is going, and if you're, let's talk about that. Like the jumping in thing is probably a bad idea unless you know exactly what you're getting into. If you don't understand cryptocurrency or blockchain in general, it's probably not a good idea to start trying to mine a Bitcoin unless you have a lot of money and like 30,000 computers and you know what I mean? Yeah. Whatever it is.
Right.
I mean,
money that you can lose.
Whatever. Or investing in cryptocurrency like altcoins or something that you don't understand because you should really know, it should be the same kind of investing advice that you get from a Warren Buffett or someone. You should research the company, make sure the financials are intact. You can't just go on a fad. With the NBA Top Shot, you know, as soon as the news broke, people started buying it. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to give it a minute. And of course, like people on the bottom floor are going to make money, but you just have to accept that you weren't there on the bottom, you know? You just,
right.
You don't want to get there on the top, you know? You don't want to get there on the top.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's talk to like, oh, it's a bubble and all this. But, you know, a heuristic that I always use, like a mental model, is that, you know, I'm an avid reader, so I read a lot of books and all the kinds of stuff. But, you know, there's a book called Anti-Fragile by Nassim Taleb. Really great book to just kind of like, you know, look at the world in a very different way. And he has a lot of different books. But if in the jumping in point, one of the things that you can use is like, okay, you look at the upside and the downside. Like if you kind of, you know, optimize to have a very minimal downside, then it actually is always worth it to invest and adopt early. Because if your loss is going to be completely insignificant, but your upside is going to be completely infinite, then you're not going to lose much.
Yeah, it's the same with poker.
Even if you like,
it's just like putting a bet in. Yeah.
Totally. Like one of my favorite books is actually Thinking in Bets by Annie Duke.
Totally.
She's a, you know, poker player.
Nice.
And she talks about this, right?
it's like when you go in a pot, it's like you can just push your money in if you know that you could win a hell of a, like if you have 10, you can win 10 times what you put in. Like even if you think you're going to lose, you put it in, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And she's always talking about resulting, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to, the result of a result doesn't determine the quality of a decision, right? Because mm-hmm. right before you put in, you know, let's say you're going to put $10 in, but you could win like $100 million by putting $10 in. Yeah. I mean, you would be an idiot not to do that.
Yeah.
But so even if you lose $10, like you put in the $10 and, you know, you lose, somebody beats you and you're like, well, my downside was only $10, so it's not going to pull me out of the game. But the upside could have been completely infinite. So therefore, it's actually a good decision, even though the result wasn't something that you wanted,
Agreed.
You know? Yeah. So a lot of people like, you know, because like my family works in tech, like a lot of the people in like tech and Silicon Valley and all those kinds of things, all they're doing is just making these small bets that have like a massive upside and a completely insulated downside. And so it doesn't really mean or matter that much. Like if they, you know, run full speed, try to like make a company and then it just kind of goes nowhere. But, you know, the company they make could be the next Uber, could be the next whatever, because, and they could be a billionaire overnight. But, you know, the downside is what? They learned something, they figured out something that doesn't work. They didn't like lose a significant amount of money because they're probably getting investments from venture capital or whatever.
Yeah.
And they operate like that over and over and over, just trying to find like the winning lotto ticket.
And I agree.
You know, going through life like that, I think is going to be actually pretty, is a good way to do it. I'm not saying like bet the farm on stuff, but like,
well,
you're always just kind of looking.
You're saying don't bet the farm like that. People do bet their life savings and that's a bad move. But what you're
totally.
Saying is people have to spend, they have disposable income. You can do what you want.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the thing too. It's like, you know, if you're, and you know, a lot of these things too is like the whole get rich quick scheme and all this kind of stuff. You're better off playing the long game over time, right? You know, like day traders are just, you know, people like trying to make a money like right now, you know, but like anybody who like is like, oh, I'm going to, I don't know, invest in an ETF, like an index fund or something, you know, and cash out in like 30, 40 years, like you're going to be fine unless the entire like financial system like disappears overnight by some weird catastrophe. But in general, like, you know, making small bets that have very insulated downside, but have massive upside is usually a good, you know, way to operate. And you're kind of, like you said, you know, you're not betting your life savings, you're betting disposable income, you're betting things and that you can afford to lose, you know, like something that's like, this little $500 that I sunk into this thing isn't going to like have some massive, you know, disruption of my life, you know, versus.
I don't even think that existed before. Right. So this is kind of new, like that genre of like loss and win.
Well,
that's definitely new.
I think it's something that musicians can relate to or should, because a lot of times musicians, for instance, learning the stuff we're talking about. I mean, we're a music podcast. Rosh is a musician, but yet we haven't even talked about music yet, but we will, obviously. But that's kind of the point, is that you're making these bets on learning these skills and all it takes is your time. And that's the always what it was with me when I'm learning. Like, yeah, my time's valuable, but I always thought it was kind of fun to learn new things, you know? So I always do. So it's not a big deal, but it is my time. I would spend hours learning how to do something, you know, whatever it was, if it was a code or soldering something or fixing something or anything, you know, I mean, whatever I'm doing, it takes time, but it's my time. So you're making investments all the time on your personal time. But a lot of musicians, they won't do that. They're like, my time's too valuable for me to learn how to promote myself or really use social media to my advantage or make my own website, whatever it is. I mean, you know.
Yeah, totally. And I wrote about this because there's like a kind of like this journey that like anybody who works in freelance, like musicians, whatever, you know, if you're a graphic designer, all this kind of stuff is like, when you start, your time's not worth anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when if you've been playing guitar for like a month, you know, probably nobody's going to pay you any money to do that, right?
Right.
They'll probably pay you money to like stop.
Yeah. Your parents then, would, yes.
Yeah. So then at some point, your time is worth a little bit. Maybe you do a cover gig for like $25, you know, with your friends, or you play the Battle of the Bands or something, and you make $25 or something like that.
Get like a Starbucks gift card.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the next step is like, as you get better at this thing, then your time's worth a lot. Like, you know, if you're, you know, Steve Lukather or something, you as a session musician, he can charge way more than I can because his time is, you know, worth more than mine because he has so many things, you know, he has a history, he has the skill set, et cetera, et cetera. And then at a certain point, the thing that we should all strive for is that your time is not for sale. So you end up going through this like journey, right? Your time's not worth anything, then your time's worth a little bit, then your time's worth a lot, and then your time's not for sale. Mm-hmm. And because your time would be better spent learning a new skill or investing in something. Like you guys have digital assets. So, you know, like if somebody was like, hey, I want to take a guitar lesson from you, you're like, well, that wouldn't even compete with me spending the same amount of time making a digital asset, like a instructional video or doing something that you can sell on the back end. And that thing.
Something that's infinite.
Yeah, infinite. Yeah. So that means your time is not for sale in that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I do have people that have asked us if, you know, we can film them or produce what they were doing or, you know, just something that's in line with what we do. And my answer is always kind of like, I don't have time enough to do what we do and raise a child and be with my wife and do whatever I have to do in the hours I have. So, and I'm okay. So I have to pass, you know, but I can recommend you to someone else. I mean, there are things I'll take up, I guess, if the offer was amazing, but most of the time it's just work and it's not, you know, applicable. Like you said, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, you guys are doing a great thing where it's like, yeah, you're not working any harder for the video that you made last week versus the first video
Correct.
That you made.
Yeah.
You made it once, you can sell it 100 times.
Yeah.
Like, that's like one of the things that I feel like a lot of musicians or just people in general just don't understand that concept where it's like, if you spend, let's say a day making something, whatever it is, and you can sell it 100, 1,000, 1,000,000 times, that is something always worth your time. Even if it's a nickel, you sell it for a nickel or, you know, a dollar or something. I mean, that's, for you guys, it's like, yeah, whatever video that you made, like, you know, a couple of years ago, you don't have to do anything to it. It's up in the, you know, on the internet. It's going to sell itself.
I agree.
You know, and the
filming time for those aren't, you know, it's not long. Those aren't long filming sessions. You know, they're a few hours usually. And, you know, when you make an app, of course, you're doing all the work up front and then you can sell it over time, but it's going to cost more up front. You know, I mean, or take more time depending on if you develop it in-house, you know, but that's something that's a longer burn. But let's talk about you were first a guitarist and you started picking up drums after that, or how did this work? Because I know that you played a number of instruments.
You know, trumpet was actually my first instrument. So I was like in marching band and all that kind of stuff. And cool. I got into punk rock, you know,
of course.
So I started learning guitar, but I kind of wanted to be a drummer.
No punk rock trumpet, man?
Damn. Well, the ska.
All right.
So exactly, I would be like in a ska band.
Like you didn't go with you didn't audition for the Dead Kennedys or anything like that at that point?
Yeah. Well, you know, my friends were just like in bands, right? I grew up in San Diego. So San Diego, you know, like the area where I'm from is like where Blink 182 is from, sure. and all these bands. So there's like a whole pop punk thing happening. And I was like, this is super fun. So I picked up a guitar, went to school for it, all that kind of stuff. And I think like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was kind of like getting a little bit burnt out on guitar. And this is a lot of the stuff that we just talked about. This is where I kind of started like developing all these ideas and reading about it, because here's kind of what happened. I wasn't burnt out like, oh man, I hate the guitar, but like I was at a point where I was maxed out on the amount of time that I was spending playing music and getting paid for it. And so there's only 24 hours in a day. There's only like, you know, you need to sleep, you need to take care of your health and do all those kinds of things. So I would wake up, go to the gym, then I would usually either like do a session or, you know, work on some project, and then I would teach all afternoon, and then I would drive from teaching to a gig, play the gig, get home at like midnight or 1 or 2 in the morning, and then wake up and repeat. And that was like every single day.
That was maxed out.
Yeah, I was maxed out. I was frustrated because I was like, okay, I love doing this, but I can't find more time in my day. How do I find more time?
There's no room. You're now done. You know?
Yeah, it's like, totally. So I was like, okay, how do I, okay, I can't find more time in the day, because I was like doing the thing where I was like, well, I'll just sleep less, you know?
And I was like, cut the fat, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, well, what else can I do? You know, I'll just sleep less. I'll just get up earlier to go to the gym. I'll get up earlier to go have time to practice and all these kinds of things. And so, and I was like, well, how do I figure out how to do this? So this is when I was like kind of like getting into the, you know, reading about things like scaling, reading about digital assets, reading about like how to like leverage your time. Because basically a lot of musicians, you know, they're just selling their time. I'm going to trade my hour for X amount of dollars. So whether it's a
typically
gig,
not
it's a
that, that cut and dry, because most musicians just sell the brick of time for the gig and not always the rehearsals or the drive, or, you know what I mean? It's not really that mathematic sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's unfortunately where I was in. I was like, kind of like, okay. And you know, my parents have like owned their own business and stuff, you know, tech business and everything like that. So I was like, okay, how do people do it outside of music? Oh, they just raise their prices, you know, or something, right? Like the market, you know, like if you're maxed out, you keep raising your prices until you can buy some of your time back. Basically.
Well, I mean, it's the question of like, all right, so I have a gig at 8, right? And they're paying me $250, but really that's going to take me from like 5 o'clock to fucking 11 o'clock. So it's just
well,
like,
have to learn
if
the
I
tunes.
Just, if I just, but no, like if I just dropped into the planet at 8 o'clock right on stage and then just whooshed away right after the gig was done, would they pay me the same amount of money? Yes.
yeah, exactly.
So it's like, okay, I need to fucking change something because that doesn't make any sense, right. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Plus you have to learn like 20 songs for the gig or whatever it is, you know?
That stuff aside, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
but just that concept.
And they're like no reading change. On the gig, so you had to like memorize it.
Yeah, and they don't pay you anymore to do that or anything.
You just have to do it.
And well, so I was thinking like, oh, maybe I just need to raise my prices. And that wasn't really getting the same effect that I wanted, because sometimes like people would be like, oh, well, you know, it's like it's almost impossible to like get a raise in this business, right?
They just go to someone else.
Yeah, exactly. So
instantly.
I was like, yeah, I was like, well, okay, that's not working. And for me, you know, I have a very like, I have like a psychology degree, so I have a science background. So a lot of what in science they do is just like trial and error, right? You just try something, you compare it, you iterate, and then you compare the results. Like, is this making you towards the thing you want to do or not? So I was like, okay, raising prices is clearly not working, because either people aren't calling me anymore, or like the market cap of a gig is only going to be X amount. Like if I'm playing some bar on Tuesday night, I can't say like, well, I need $1,000 to play this bar.
You can say that.
Like they're, you know, like the market's only going to bear, there's only so much the market can bear.
Won't
if I'm playing
well.
For like, yeah, exactly. So I was like, okay, how else do I earn income? So I actually like started
I just pictured like the cartage company coming in to like a fucking dive bar with all your shit.
or like at the whiskey, even, you know, just like there's like four bands and like you have to put your stuff outside. You just have like this trailer full of shit.
They come in with a truck.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Like, all right, coming style. Through. Get the hell out of my way. All right, coming through.
Yeah, it just doesn't work that way. So I was like in this point where I was like, okay. And I started reading up on a couple things. And so one of the things that I read up on is this idea of like the skill stack, or this idea of what's called specific knowledge, right? And you just Google it. There's a lot of really great writers that talk about it. Naval Ravikant is like a guy that I really like, love his ideas and writing and stuff. And so a lot of what I write about is basically like, you know, different ideas based on some of his ideas. So I was like, okay, instead of like being just a guitar player, right? Because you can throw a rock in LA and hit like 100 great guitar players.
I've done that many times.
I was like, how do I kind of...
Jake, you throw rocks at guitar players.
I'm trying to get them off. Like, go away.
Exactly. I mean, you know, don't throw a rock. Throw like a dollar bill in like the other direction. They'll leave the stage, you know? Like,
I have still have a bunch of Pat Metheny picks I could throw them and then, like, fish them away.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, buy like a bunch of like overdrive pedals in bulk, and then just like throw them in like the other direction you want them to go, like a dog with a ball.
Just get like
some Boss Metal black ones.
I'll just like 3D print some fake tube screamers and paint them, and then, you know, yeah,
that's a good idea.
Looks like vintage ones though. You know, they have to look vintage. No one wants a new one.
Exactly. So, you know, I was like trying to figure out like all these different ideas right around like 6 or 7 years ago. I was like, okay, cool. Because I was kind of, the other thing is that I was like, you get diminishing returns on a lot of things in music. For example, like, you know, to be like LeBron level or Kobe level or whatever in basketball, to be that, I mean, how many hours does it take, right?
Yeah.
At a certain point, there's this diminishing returns in playing music. Like, you practicing for like 10 hours a day is only going to net you, you know, like an extra X amount. And it's not really the same as the first, you know, 10 years of you playing that instrument. So I was like, well, let me put some of my spare practice time into another skill set. And then maybe I can find at the intersection of two different skill sets will be something that nobody in LA has. Mm-hmm. And so I was like coming up with certain things, and I was just trying things. I was like, okay, well, there's not a lot of guitar players who can also play drums, or there's not a lot of drummers who can also play guitar, or whatever, vice versa. So I was like, okay, maybe I can corner the market on that. I was also like, always wanted to be a drummer. You know, I wanted to be a drummer, but my parents were like, no,
right?
Yeah. No way. It's too loud. And I grew up with my grandparents in the house. So it's like, no way. So, you know, and again, it was also like the burnout from guitar. It was kind of just like, ugh, you know, because when you're gigging that many nights a week, you know, and you're playing like Don't Stop Believing in a bar like 4 or 5 nights a week, it's like, okay, you know, how much more time do I need to spend on playing and practicing guitar that's going to get me into like another tax bracket?
Right. Yeah. But you clearly didn't listen to the words of that song.
Also true.
I will also say, like,
gave up, man. No, I'm just kidding.
Which is kind of like an important thing in like what you were just saying. The burnout from one thing honestly can be the thing that lifts off the next. Like that burnout feeling will be your energizer to like learn the drums. So I bet when you made the decision to start learning drums, you were probably like fucking psyched.
I know.
And like had no problem.
Because you sound really good at drums. I was checking out your stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you sound really good, and you could tell. And Jake's right. I mean, it's one of those things that when you can put energy. I remember I was talking to Asaf Rode. Do you know Asaf? He's a great guitarist and MD, and we had him on before, but he's also, I used to play with him a bunch in LA. And I remember him saying that if us musicians or any of us used the same amount of time we spent at perfecting what we do into like making a bar, opening up a bar, it'd be like the best bar in the world or like whatever it is, like the amount of time. It's like whatever you put your mind to, if you use the amount of dedication and practice and energy we've used, you know, it's unbelievable. You know what I mean? It's really
right.
It's really easy to learn new things if you have that kind of drive. Or not easy, yeah, but it's easy to get into that routine, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of like, it was a conflation of a lot of different events. Like one other thing was I was like buying strings at Guitar Center on Sunset, and then there was like drummer named Mike Johnston, you know, and he's like, you know, really big on YouTube. He's a educator and everything like that. And he was actually doing a clinic at the Sam Ash, like right next to Guitar Center.
Nice.
And literally walked in, bought some strings. I was like thinking about all these things, like, oh man, you know, how can I squeeze more hours in the day? And then it was like, tonight, Mike Johnston, you know, drum clinic. So I was like, oh, let me just check this out. And he has a really great, great teaching style. Like, you know, he's kind of one of those guys that makes you believe anybody can play drums, you know, just by what he teaches. So it was like that happened like right around the same time I was kind of like debating some of these ideas. And I was like, you know what? Like, I've always wanted to play drums. I want to be better at something else because, like, again, me spending 1,000 more hours practicing guitar is not going to net me $1,000 more per gig. Like, that's not, there's no direct translation. I was kind of level, you know, it was like leveling off, you know, in a way. It's like, I don't need to be better at my instrument to play Mustang Sally or to play these like cover gigs I was playing around town. And like, I'm not really like an artist. Like, I don't write my own music or anything like that. So it was like, okay, I should devote some of this practice time, this spare time into another skill that I could leverage in some way. So I thought about it, I was like, well, if I start learning drums and start getting good at it, maybe I could start getting some gigs as a drummer. That's going to be put me with a different set of people because I'm a guitar player. So I'm always hanging out with like the people that guitar players hang out with, other guitar players, you know, all we do is talk about pedals and all kinds of stuff. So I said, well, if I'm a drummer, then I'll be hanging out with drummers.
And bass players.
And they're going to be like, oh, you play guitar too? Right. Oh, cool. Maybe I could call you for this thing. And I was like, okay, that's another set of people that I could feasibly meet in the future. I could always teach drums. You know, I do have a passion for teaching. I do have a passion for education. So that's like another thing that I could, another market I could dip a toe into, like giving drum lessons as well. And
Plus, you're not stopping. That's the fucking thing. Like, right. You're not stopping doing all the other stuff because you still have to make a living.
Yeah,
so this
exactly.
is like in addition to, you know.
You're going right. where the wind yes, blows in a way, right? I mean, it's kind of, I've done that as well, where when I was writing in Los Angeles, I was playing bass and, you know, making money from that. But then if a production project came in or a writing project, I do that. And I'd go wherever the work was. You know, you just go with the wind at a certain point, you know. And I'd be happy doing whatever it was. Like, I was equally happy doing all of it.
Yeah, totally. And it's a skill stack because you're going to be the bass player who can do production or you're going to be the drummer who can also play. Like by me learning how to play drums, my guitar playing improved.
Of course.
You know, it was funny. I like kind of didn't even really like spend too much time practicing the guitar outside of like learning music for gigs. And then I noticed that my time was better.
Yeah.
I noticed that my confidence of like counting off a tune or playing the intro of a tune was like, you know, really, really strong now. I listened to myself play back on sessions and I was like, oh, cool. I'm like totally gridded with a click now when I play guitar rather than like having to do 100 takes to like really nail something with good feel. And so that intersection between those two instruments like presented a lot of different things that, you know, I could leverage into other things. And then I started hanging out with drummers more who started calling me for gigs that would have never called me because I would have never met them. So those kinds of things like all happen, like, you know, with musicians, it's like sometimes they just get stuck doing their thing. I'm a keyboard player and all I do is keyboard stuff and that's it. And suddenly like you're kind of like in this little box and you can't, and you're wondering why, like, well, I work with the same people all the time. I do the same thing and they want to branch out. Well, you have to branch out your skill set too, right? Like, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of musicians like suddenly like were doing all these kinds of left turns. Like, I'm going to get into real estate or I'm going to get into coding or what, all these things. And I found myself lucky that I was already doing that like many years ago.
Yeah.
So that like by the time the pandemic hit, I was like, oh, thank God I have this like infrastructure of a bunch of different things that I can already do. So I don't have to like do things out of desperation and try to like pivot on a dime. I was already like doing all that kind of stuff previously.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to pivot on that dime, especially when the floodgates open up. I mean, everyone was trying to do it. Everyone's trying to teach online, live stream, do it all or whatever they had to do. And it's like, yeah, but if you had been doing that for years, you'd have an audience or a clientele or something, you know? So, I mean, of course, you don't want to hit someone while they're down or kick them, but it's definitely trickier to start when shit goes wrong.
Right. And that's why, like, you know, I started writing stuff, you know, on my Facebook and Twitter and stuff about freelancers. Cause I ended up getting a lot of phone calls like in, you know, last March or whatever, or like April, like, oh my God, all my gigs are gone. my income has gone from 100% to zero.
Yeah.
What do I do now? You know, like people were, and I totally, totally, totally sympathize and empathize with people who were going through those kinds of situations. And they were asking me, it's like, well, hey, Rosh, I already know you do a lot of remote stuff. You know, like, how do I get into that? How do I do this? What kind of gear should I buy? You know, because a lot of people didn't even have like a bedroom Pro Tools setup at all.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, I've been helping people too. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I was, and like you said, I thought it was crazy. I was like, wait, you don't even know how to use Logic, or you don't even have an interface at home?
No, like, a lot of people don't.
I was like, you could totally be making some side money doing this. You're a good, you know, XYZ instrument. You're a good keyboard player, drummer, whatever. And, you know, like Sweetwater's doing like a 48-month no interest, you know, buy this and you don't have to pay the thing back over 4 years or whatever. Like, just get this going now so you can leverage it later rather than like trying to pick up. So yeah, a lot of people were pivoting on a dime. So I started writing about things that I had like maybe learned over, you know, the past several years or whatever, stuff that I found effective for my own things, because I was like really trying to help other people out. I was like, hey, here's some concepts that maybe I take for granted that maybe you're not aware of. Like a lot of the stuff in the software space that my mom did in particular, she worked for Intuit, which does TurboTax.
Totally.
So
I know that software well. Tell her thank you.
That's like, I'll give a shout out.
Adam, hey, mom.
Actually, I got a few tags. I got a few notes for her, all right? So yeah. the categories are all wrong for musicians. No,
but exactly, like, you know, here's some things that I thought were like, I took this for granted because I was like, oh, I grew up with a parent who knew the tax space in and out. She's like, here's all the things you can write off. Here's how to file your taxes. She would,
that is a necessary skill, man. And we talk,
here's how to leave the country when the IRS.
No, seriously. No, but musicians, you just, know, it's like 80% of them know nothing about it. They just hand it off.
Yeah, exactly. And she would do little side gigs at H&R Block, like, you know, filing taxes for people like in between, like working for that. So I learned all the tax stuff from her, you know, basically my entire adult life. I was like, oh, cool. Like, you know, I got to file by this. Here's how 1099s work, blah, blah, blah. Here's how much you should put away. Here's what quarterlies are. Here's what, adjusted gross income means. Here's what a Schedule C is, blah, 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 blah. Again, things that I took for granted growing up, just going like, yeah, this is, everybody knows this, right? And then I would talk to musicians and they'd be like, oh, you can't file an extension if you're getting 1099s. I'm like, no, dude, like you got to file like now.
If you're a freelancer, like, oh, you don't have the same thing going on.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, oh, I didn't put any money away because all my income comes from 1099s. Oh,
especially like first tours.
It's like, do you have a special 1099 that took taxes out? It's like, no, it doesn't really work like that.
Yeah, exactly. They're
you
like,
owe 16 grand.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, you know, I've had so many of these conversations with the musician friends. I was like, you know, every April comes around, everybody's like all stressed out. They're like, oh my God, I have to pay X amount. And I'm like, you didn't put anything away over the entire year. Like, or pay quarterlies or whatever. I mean, again, something I take for granted. So I decided to like start just writing, and I was like, okay, let me just like, just do this, see if it helps people. Let me see if I can do this in a consistent way. Because again, I was like trying to practice my skill set. A lot of people were going like, oh, are you doing this for anything in particular? I was like, yeah, maybe I'll write a blog or something, or maybe, you know, do something. Maybe a tweet will go viral on Twitter and I'll get some attention. I have no idea. But, you know, just like what we were talking about earlier. Yeah, what we were talking about earlier, you're making small bets, right?
Yeah, you got to try.
So like if you post something on the internet, the downside is completely small. Like unless
you get trolled like horribly by like everyone, and like the Daily Show is like on you, and you know, besides that, it's just
certain keywords maybe to stay away from.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. Like unless it's negative attention, but I mean, that's rare unless you're just an asshole. And when it comes down to it, it's either noticed or you get 300 views or you know whatever.
Exactly. So I just figured, okay, I'm just going to practice in public, practice writing, practice how to like sound intelligent, quote unquote, how to maybe develop this writing skill set. Because, you know, in the development world, you're also going to sometimes have to write copy, you know, for a website.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was trying to figure out how to like get better at that. And I was like, well, the easiest way is not to like keep it in a Node app and never let anybody see it, because you don't know if it sucks. Yeah. You know, if I put something out there and somebody's like, oh, you misspelled this word. And I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. Like, duh. Or stuff like that. Or if it got, you know, any type of traction for people, or even if it just helps people, you know, because a lot of people out there are struggling. You know, it doesn't matter what industry you're in. It's pretty tough right now for a lot of people.
I agree.
And so I was thinking like, okay, these are some things I take for granted. And then maybe people don't know about these things. So it'll help them in some way to maybe scale their income. And, you know, because like a lot of musicians, like you said earlier, like they don't know what digital assets are.
No.
Musicians like, oh, I'm going to write a hit song and then hope like that's going to earn some income. That's one of a zillion things you could do as a digital asset that's going to earn you income on the
back. And if you can get that done, then that's mailbox money. It's perfect. You know, I mean, it's something that can continue. Your library will continue to make you money if you can get to that level. But there's a lot of other options. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, there's this misconception too, I think, personally, is that like, oh, people think like, oh, if I have like, you know, mailbox money, if I have, you know, money that's going to earn while I sleep, right? Or things that are going to earn money while I sleep. Yes, there are things that exist like that. Real estate, you know, investments, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of people also don't think that a digital asset also bringing attention to you can earn you income. Like, for example, if you put up an instructional video of XYZ, of however you do your thing, of whatever it is. Yeah, people may not buy your course or may not buy the digital asset that you're selling that's tied to that, but that draws attention to you that they could then ask you, hey, do you teach or can we do a consult?
Yeah.
I mean, I've earned, you know, a significant amount of income because I put a bunch of videos online, Axe FX tutorials, you know, like on YouTube, like here's how to like make a basic preset. Here's how to like make it sound like AC/DC. Here's some real basic 10-minute tutorials. It takes me 10 minutes of time.
Right.
You know, maybe. And then another like half an hour to edit it and throw it up on YouTube and tag it and do all that stuff.
But you're highlighting yourself as an expert on that thing. And by doing that, that's what people see. If you can show yourself in that kind of light and expertise, it can't be bad. It can't. It can only be good.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had people reach out to me. Hey, I stumbled across your YouTube videos. I have this very specific problem or this thing I'm trying to do. I want to build a guitar tone that sounds like Robin Ford or something. And I go, because I don't have a video up online that's showing how to make your guitar sound like Robin Ford. And then they email me, hey, can you help me do that? And I'm like, absolutely. I would love to help you.
Yeah.
You know, my rate is X. And, you know, and they go, great. Because, you know, if you spend your time fixing other people's problems, they're always going to pay you. You know, like if your toilet's backed up, you will call a plumber. You're not going to just like not deal with that.
Especially just as good for them. They're fucking pumped. You know,
it's
a great feel. Like when you solve a problem, that's amazing. You're like, hell yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And also, I mean, that's that kind of thing, that kind of device, the, you know, any kind of amp sim device that you're going to use on tour means that that person has amps, most likely. I mean, I guess there's some people that don't, but they have a new rig that they're going to use for a lucrative situation, hopefully. And hopefully they have the money to spend on getting a program properly, or they have to get dirty and figure it out themselves.
You're going to a very specific market when you're doing those kinds of things. Like the stuff that you guys make, you know, it's a very specific market.
It is. But so is that.
Yeah. But that's where like things live, because we all can't just make like an iPhone.
No.
That is going to appeal to this huge market that like everybody in the world's gonna
want. Stairway to iPhone. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, or whatever. But man, there's so many niches out there. Niche, whatever.
I like
however
niche.
You pronounce it.
It depends on your I think it's tomato, actually. Go ahead.
But you know, like if you go to the market where there's some demand and you have that market corner because you're an expert at it, or you make the best quality, or you can generate more of it, or you can do it faster, quicker, cheaper, you're gonna earn more income doing that. And so like, you know, with the Axe FX or something, there's only like a handful of people that like are doing this kind of thing online. So I'm not, my competition's not like every guitar player in LA versus like, if I was like, oh, I just want to get a gig, play a gig in LA,
it's,
you know, post-pandemic,
yeah,
pre-pandemic, you're competing with like thousands of people. This one, I'm only competing with like a very small select group of people. And there's enough room for everybody. That's the big thing, because it's the internet. How many people are on the internet right now? It's like billions.
At least five. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like what you guys are making, you know, this instructional content and content with really amazing musicians. It's like who else is doing that? You don't really see that.
Well, that's why we got into it, because there was a lot of learn how to play guitar or learn how to play this, and there was too many. So we decided, and of course, that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to do exactly what we're doing. But also when I looked, there was really like one or two people doing it, and not the way that we were going to do it. So it's worked out. But also what you're saying before makes a lot of sense. And it's what I've told. We preach the same stuff, you know. For instance, if you're a pianist and you're a really, really talented jazz pianist, I have friends that are just jazz pianists. That's it. They compose. They're good at Sibelius, you know, maybe. But that's it. That's their technical skill. You know, they're just nasty jazz pianists. But they're the elite. Other than that, I mean, if you're just a really, really solid jazz pianist, or maybe just really great but younger and not as established, you really need to learn how to program, you know? I mean, or like just to understand how a synth works. Because that's, I mean, it's so helpful to understand that. And a lot of people don't do that, you know? So I would suggest that if anyone is an amazing pianist, but also young and looking, you know, and struggling because there's only so many gigs and the elder statesmen are still have them, then, you know, broaden by stuff that's actually in your wheel, on your instrument, you know, like learning programming, keyboard programming is just a great skill, and not everyone can do it.
You could literally just do it for churches and make a career out of it. You know what I mean? Well, like
which Percaro brother was it? There was like one of the Percaro brothers in Toto. He would do that as a side gig before Toto broke and he was like the guy, you know? He was going around not only tuning pianos, but he was like fixing synths and like programming keyboards. This is like back in the 80s, so like he was going around doing that as like a side gig. And it's almost like when I heard that, I was like, oh, I'm doing basically the same thing, but for guitar players, you know, like how do I get my rack to switch all these different rack mounted units and these delay units in time when I press this button on the pedal board or whatever. And, but yeah, like you said, you're diversifying your streams of income, right? You're decentralizing your income because like if you, you know, only have one gig, like let's say you're working for artist XYZ, right? You're like, okay, I am the keyboard player for this artist.
Yeah.
Like the minute that goes away, your income goes from 100% to zero.
And it can happen so quickly. The artist can die. They can get canceled. They can fire you. Like it's just the way it works. Yeah.
Right. Now, if you, let's say, work with that artist, but like you also have the side gig of programming keyboards, you also do sessions, you teach, you do all these other things. Like the minute like one of those things disappears, you still have all this other stuff.
Totally.
And like, we saw it happen with the pandemic with like a lot of musicians, right? They were only gigging. They only played live. They were either a touring person or they were like local live gigs or whatever. The minute all that went away in the pandemic, they were like, oh my God, what am I going to do?
And A-list and musicians were feeling it. You know what I mean? It's really fucked up. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, you know, it's scary, you know, and I totally sympathize. Again, it was like at the time when the pandemic happened last March, like gigging was maybe a third of my income total. So I felt the pinch, of course. I was like,
yeah, but you didn't get
God,
a sledgehammer on your head either, you know? It's a difference.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was more like a punch in the face. I was like, oh my God, okay, ouch, that hurts.
Plus, that was still in your own hands, if I remember. A lot of that was that like the live karaoke thing? Because that was super awesome.
Like, right, yeah.
People think that they can't make their own scene.
Right,
Bruce Foreman loves to talk about that. Like, that's his thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he tries to push young musicians, like, go make your own scene. Like, don't rely on everybody, you know, and you did it with that. Like, you made something that like was real, and then that was, it's paying you back and it's your thing, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I mean,
that's, you know, that's my personal survival instinct. Like, if the plane's going down, I'm going to like be looking for the exit. I'm not like just going to be like, well, I guess we're screwed, you know? Like,
yeah.
I just kind of like have this action bias where I just kind of like spring into overdrive. Anything happens, it's probably like so many different factors, but like anything happens like on stage on a gig or something, like I hear some buzz or like guitar's not working, like instantly my mind already goes to like this point of like, okay, the cable, the signal flow, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And so like when the pandemic happened, like the shutdowns and all that in March, it was like the same thing. I was like, okay, gigging's going to go away. How do I supplement the third of income that I just lost, like literally overnight?
Yep.
Gigs are getting canceled left and right. How do I do this?
And you want to hit the ground running before others. I mean, unfortunately, it's not like a competition, but in a way, I mean, you have to look out for yourself and, you know, you want to get on it, right? I mean, like, you want to stay ahead of it is what I'm trying to say.
Totally. Well,
and then you're in a position to help others if once you're on your feet, you know?
I've said the same thing when I was in New York before I lived in Los Angeles and then New York again. I was in New York and 9/11 happened. Oh. And I was playing, you know, as a bass player, just playing all over the place. And
yeah, you and Peter were talking about this shit. I never really thought of that.
And we played everywhere. I mean, that's what I did. I made all my money playing. And then all of a sudden, no one wanted to come into New York. And it lasted longer than you'd think, you know. And so if no one wants to come into New York, the restaurants don't want to hire, and the bars, and no one's hiring musicians, or they're paying them half of what they're paying them. So this whole thing got me thinking right away. I said, that was a wake-up call. And even though stuff came back a lot quicker than COVID, like way, way quicker. This is like, now that I'm saying it in light of COVID, it sounds like nothing. But back then it was heavy. And it got me thinking. And so I started writing and producing music. And then I started writing for television. And I started learning how to produce and mix and master. And I was doing it for other artists. And I was doing whatever I could. And then I was pretty bulletproof for a while. I mean, I wasn't rich when I was young, but I always had like five things that were going on, you know? And and by doing that, I was always thinking ahead. Maybe it's because I'm like, you know, neurotic, probably. But it worked out, you know? And also I do love all the little things. Like I love mixing and mastering, and I love code. I love music. I love all of it. I mean, I like being my own boss, most importantly, you know? I think that's cool. Not having to do what you don't want to do.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
Someone you don't want to do it for.
Yeah, I guess it depends. I mean, if other people are like, music is literally the only thing I want to do and I hate doing all these other things, I could see. But there's got to be something, right? Like, you don't have to do what I do or what you do, but I think people have to find what they're comfortable with that they can expand upon with what they love and find us a niche, you know, I mean, that can help.
Amen. Yeah, I think it's, there's this concept called specific knowledge. And it's basically like, if it looks and feels like play to you, but it looks like work to other people, that's like something you gotta like double, triple, quadruple down on. Because because people go, well, like,
that's
you
cool.
Know,
I gotta research that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I just love that concept in general. It's like the best way to look at it.
Yeah. Cause, well, people get this weird, maybe misconception of like, oh, just do what you love and blah, 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 blah. It's more like, because then people go, well, I love to sit in front of the TV and do nothing. I'm like, no. We're not talking about that. We're talking about specific knowledge where it's like, okay, for example, like code, you know, doing a lot of code stuff does not feel like work to me. I'm like, oh, this is kind of fun. Like trying to solve this algorithm, trying to make my algorithm go faster, trying to make sure that the runtime
and you see
is
what
smaller.
It's like building something. You see the result with it, with code, the same as you'd be building a house. Like it's something tangible.
Yeah, totally. So I'm doing that. And of course, anybody looking over my shoulder or looking at my work would be like, oh my God, I have no idea what you're doing.
And my eyes are bleeding.
Two, this looks, they go, two, this looks really boring or really stupid or whatever. So right then and there, I know I have like there's something there that I can double down on. You know, like if you're playing, you know, music or whatever, like there's a lot of musicians that in town that were like, oh, I'll never do a cover gig, you know? And for me, I was like, well, playing covers is fine. I have fun doing it.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it's not a big deal to me. It's not like, oh, you know, there's all these other challenges, of course, with playing a gig that we won't talk about. But like, just playing a gig full of cover songs is fine to me. Yeah. Like I had fun doing it. So right then and there, like even other musicians were viewing something that I felt was play that looked like work to them. So therefore, I can just double down on it because it doesn't feel like I'm doing any work. I'm just like, oh, this is fun. You're talking about mixing and mastering. It's like the same thing. Like, you know, I talk to engineer friends all the time and they can sit in front of a computer, listen to the same three bars of music for 8 hours.
Just a kick drum.
Oh, dude. And you'd have to do it. Yeah. And your significant other is so pissed. You know what I mean? They're like, it's literally just you're looping two measures and you're like trying to EQ like a certain frequency. Yeah. It's so, it must be so tedious to someone else.
Exactly. But you know,
that
if you find that fun, if you find that
I did, yeah,
totally like feels like play, like you're just having a good time, you're doing it and you would do it anyway, you double down on that. Because so it's different than like people who go, well, I want to just like sit on the couch or I want to go on vacation all the time. Yeah, sure. We all do.
That's a reward. I'm talking about things, you know, that's like, yeah.
Right. I'm talking about things that you can, that are actionable, things that will actually earn you income, because the minute it looks like work to somebody else, they will hire you to do that. Like, for example, like I can maybe do an oil change on my car. That's about it. Right. And so is it worth my time to do an oil change? No. Like it'll take me like 8 hours to like change my oil, get everywhere. It'll be all over my driveway. Whereas I can just pay somebody to
plus
do
you're not
it.
You're not interested really in it.
Yeah, you know? I'm not interested. But you know, how many people do we know that are like total car nuts?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. There's a drummer I know, his name's Michael O'Neill, and he runs a really great podcast, you know, and he loves Porsches.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, he's always building Porsches. He's talking about Porsches. He has YouTubes about Porsches.
I mean, that's kind of badass, actually. I mean, yeah. Because I can see why that's so exciting to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just not
totally
that interested in cars. But
I'd be the same.
But it's so deep. It's just like anything. I mean, I can see why it's awesome.
And he can talk about Porsches for like till the cows come home. I'm not a car guy.
Yeah.
I don't even like Porsches. Sorry, Michael, if you're listening.
Right.
But the fact that it feels like play to him, but it looks like work. Again, if I somehow like get gifted a Porsche or get inherit a Porsche or something, he's going to be the first guy. Yeah.
He's going to like rebuild the transmission for like 3 days. And you would just like kill yourself doing that.
Yeah, but, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
He'd be interested in my father's project right now.
Exactly. Your father has an old one.
Yeah, but exactly. Yeah. So like, these are the things that like so many people like don't realize that they actually have in their possession. So many freelancers and musicians that I'm like, it's the same thing. It's like, dude, I cannot play keyboard to save my life. Like, I cannot. I can barely play like chopsticks. I'm actually faster at mousing in MIDI than actually like trying to play the keyboard part.
That's awesome.
I'd rather just like, you know, mouse it in. I can't even play it and then quantize it later. Like, that's how bad I am at keyboard. So, but you know, I have a friend, you know, Peter Dyer. He's like, he's all about synths and keyboards. Like, I just go, you know what? You love doing this stuff. You eat this stuff for breakfast. I will pay you whatever your rate is because you're not only having a good time, but I will get something that's high quality because you actually love what you're doing.
Agreed. Yeah.
It's just, you know, and a lot of people like don't, you know, they don't really go through this or they don't really look at the specific knowledge that they have that is actionable. You can use it as leverage. You can earn income with it. You know, like my mom like loves plants. She's like a garden. You know,
horticulturist,
something like that.
Yeah.
So, and here's the thing: there's a whole like scene. There's a whole like weird, crazy like small subset of people that buy and flip plants. That's all they do.
Flip your plant. It's a show. No, I don't know.
Yeah, they collect plants and they grow them and then they sell them.
Oh,
and there's
cool.
This whole like little tiny subculture economy that's built on just people like buying and flipping plants.
I think it's even more specific. I think that there's like fern experts, you know, for instance, who, because I've seen shit, because my son was interested in ferns for a minute. So we watched some show to see the different types. And there was like a fern expert on YouTube. And they were talking about how they get these spores, you know what I mean? And you have to propagate each spore and there's a million, you know, it was just this process that I was intrigued by because it was so, when you see someone passionate about something, it's always exciting for me. But I can't do that. That's not me. But at the same time, that's some detailed, awesome stuff.
His name was Justin Fernan. He went on to do Bon Iver.
Between Two Ferns is actually a good movie.
Shit. Wow. But yeah, exactly. So there's so many like, and again, because the internet gives you access to everybody mostly everybody on the planet, right?
That can use a computer,
Yeah, that you can be part of this thing and you can, you know, like it seems silly now, but like earning a dollar on the internet was not that long. It was not a crazy idea not too far long ago. Mm-hmm. Did I say that right?
Like, I know what you mean.
Yeah, earning a dollar on the internet seemed like a crazy idea like I know, 20, 30 years ago. And so, but now everybody's can do it, you know what I mean? And if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, you know, how do I like earn some income? Like, start with a dollar, like of whatever the thing is that you do. Like, I guarantee there's going to be people out there that like want access to what you do because we all have personal monopolies,
yeah,
right?
Just go to Fiverr.
Yeah.
And just like, whatever, you know, just make a service and just start, you know, helping people with their Instagram page or whatever. You know, there's lots of ways, lots of marketplaces to figure out your niche. Someone will buy it if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, even musicians like within their instrument or within their little tiny, like, you know, there's a whole drum culture, right? Like drummers have this own, their whole thing, like this whole little thing that they only drummers are interested in. They only talk about it. It's the same with guitar players, of course, like pedals, amps, you know, picks, guitars, you know, exactly. So even within that like tiny subculture of the music business, the music culture is like, you can have like different things. You know, I have a friend who's a drum tech. So he goes around to every studio and tunes drums, you know, goes around to every studio and reheads the drums and all this kind of stuff and sets up the mics and all those kinds of things. And he's a killer drummer. It's like, okay, so now he has two sources of income that are related to drums, related to things that he loves. Yeah,
because he did it himself and he knew how to do it and he did it well enough that other people wanted to, you know, hire him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you in this business, you know, you get like recommended or you have enough social proof behind you that, you know, you have the validation, you have the credentialing of whatever. Because it's like, you don't need a college education, you don't need a college like credentialing to be able to like do a lot of these things now. Because you just have to be good enough to at least show somebody else how to do it. And you know, it doesn't even need to be like significant. It's like, you don't need to be like Michael Jordan to like give basketball lessons. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you just need to be good enough to like show somebody how to do it. And you can even sell like, you know, a product or something that's related to that, you know? Because a lot of people like, for example, like one thing that, one really great concept is selling your sawdust, right? So like, let's say you're a musician and you are like a great guitar player, right? And you do all these sessions, you're a good, great player, blah, blah, blah. People also want to learn how you do that, right? Mm-hmm. So now instantly you have two markets. You have the market of like people who want to hire you as the guitar player and then people who want to hire you as the educator to show what you do.
Yeah, and the odds that both of those will dry up at the same time is unlikely.
Exactly. And it's two completely different markets. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the stuff that, you know, like all the drum content. I'm like the biggest nerd of all that kind of stuff that you guys have put up where I was like, oh my God, yes. I didn't know Nate Smith had like an instructional like thing. I was
he's
like,
a monster, I've been, man.
Oh my God. But you know, it's like, it's rare to find like him explaining what he does. Yeah. He's just such an amazing drummer that you just hear him on a record or you see him on a video or you hear him on a tour. And he's like, okay, cool. He's amazing. My thing is like, yes, I know he's amazing, but please explain to me what you're doing, what your concept is. And he came
from marching like band, which is crazy. I didn't know that, you know, until we did the masterclass.
Right.
That's exactly. how he has those hands. You know what I mean? He's got those marching band hands.
And the thing is, it's like, man, you don't need to be Nate Smith, like of that level. And even then, most people are like, some people probably listening to this, like, who's Nate Smith?
Agreed.
And yeah, so you don't need to be like world class in that way. You just need to be good enough that somebody's interested in what you're doing. Like this whole like programming guitar rigs for people, like I wouldn't say I'm world class. I would just say that like I know I have this little like specific little thing.
Say it. Set of skills.
So, you know, I just know enough that like I can at least point people in the right direction.
Right.
Go like, oh, you want to get this kind of sound.
Well, you could solve problems.
Right. That's the whole thing.
You could at least get them, like, if you can't do it, you could definitely get them close. You know what I mean? And then, like, in doing that, you're gonna want to learn how to go all the way. So the next time someone asks you that, you're gonna know all the way.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're gonna become a master. You know what I mean? Like, that's how shit works. It's that's why you can't be afraid to you know, sell your services. It's like, because you're always gonna be learning. You're never gonna reach some thing where it's like, okay, now I can sell myself. It's like that doesn't
right.
You not just how need that to shit
be,
works.
Yeah, you just need to be like. Even a couple months ahead of whoever.
I agree, man. Man, I could literally, I don't even know. I just looked down at the time. We've been rapping and it's like amazing. I could do this. So I could do it all night because I'm a nerd and I love this shit, but my wife is going to kill me and my son's going to start yelling and all that stuff's going to happen. But
yeah, for sure.
Man, this was great. And it was great to meet you because, you know, I didn't know Rosh before this. You know, Jake and Rosh know each other, and it was amazing to talk to you about all this stuff because, you know, I think this is really important stuff for people to understand, and you have a really articulate way of talking about it, which is, it's great, especially in these times. It's so uncertain for so many people. I think it's just important to remind everyone that you just have to think like an entrepreneur and just be smart and be able to diversify. Don't have all your stocks in one basket, which isn't really, it's kind of a mixed metaphor, but you get the idea. And yeah, man, it was great hanging, and thanks so much, man.
Of course. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail, you can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So, look forward to hearing from you.